Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hello and welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast for an exciting episode alongside Chris Rosenthal. We've got a special guest in the house, Dan Arestra. Guys, what's up? Pretty slow day in the office, huh?
Not a lot happening today. No, it's pretty quiet out there. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know why I don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, just a whole lot of downtime, really.
Whole lot of not downtime for the general managers and head coaches of the Premier Lacrosse League on a wild Tuesday of player movement that saw a first round pick get dealt. We'll discuss, and Matt Rambo wearing Atlas colors now. So the headliner, of course, came when NCAA tournament most outstanding player, Princeton championship winning goalie Ryan Krodick, got claimed, as you first reported, Chris Rosenthal, by the Denver Outlaws. And then, Arestra, you reported that immediately. We were like, the Outlaws got him. They got Logan McNaney, who's making 80% clean saves and 2-time goalie here in college, Owen McElroy. Why are they picking up another goalie? And then you're reporting that there's some offers on the table. So, Rosie, let's start with you. What you learned about the process, and then we'll go to Dan for some of the crazy a done deal that has gone through. We can confirm since the waiver.
Well, I mean, look, I don't think Ryan Krodick really jumped out of nowhere or anything like that. It's not like it was a name no one knew, but I would certainly say that his name got a lot bigger during the postseason. Just as far as people who maybe didn't watch a lot of Princeton, you know, when the tournament starts to whittle down, you start to pay a little more attention to some of these teams, and you say, hey, this guy's really kind of head and shoulders above the rest of these guys. And, you know, by the end of it, it almost felt kind of inevitable. You know, you heard his coach saying after the game, he's like, you know, really hope he gets a shot at the pro level. I think really all it came down to was just a matter of space, right? It's very tough to find a goalie job in the PLL. Not a lot of teams looking for a goalie. You know, there's so many who are just super elite. So it's really tough. Like, I kind of feel like you have a super elite number one, and then usually a number two who's almost like got deep roots in the organization or something like that, who's more than just a second body. So it's super tough to find a spot. So I think that was always the question of if someone was going to be able to figure out where to put him. And I'd say Tim Sudan did kind of figure out, yeah, I can do something. I can do something with him. He is a known quantity who people are interested in. So let me reach out and go ahead and make that claim.
Rich, before you start, and I'll throw it to you, I'm curious because, you know, we watch a lot of college ball. You're a Inside Lacrosse media voter for the final All-Americans that come out at the end of the regular season. And to Rosie's point, because I think it's a great one even for the guys, the diehard fans that are watching every college game like us, that, you know, like his stock obviously did rise when you win a title in college. Where do you remember where you had him in your final All-American bout?
I might have had him first team. I think my teamers were in some order him and Sean Byrne, and those two were my first two for sure. You're asking me to go deep into the memory here to remember where I had guys.
No doubt.
I think those were my top two. Those were my first team and second team in some order. It might have been the other way around, but Ryan Krodick for me was at worst second team All-American.
Yeah.
And I mean,
I don't need to expose myself because you were about to go transition there, but I will. And I think I had Sean Byrne as my first team. Who was my second team?
The other guys in the mix were like Grayson Manning and
Grayson Manning was my second season.
Zayak and
for you know, his first half of the season, and he kept them for
Richard Deli came on really, really big late in the year and was pushing onto people's teams and stuff.
And because of like goalies getting shelled, like you look at saves per game in addition to overall save percentage, Owen Salinger was my third team from UMass. So he's in the mix too. And I felt like in retrospect, obviously hindsight 2020, feel terrible that my honorable mention was between Kroddick and Richie Udeli, and you saw how they both played in the title game. So all that to say, his stock did rise in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, his stock went way up in the tournament. I think, you know, throughout the year when he came to look for like the goalies in college lacrosse who could be good pros, like Ryan Kroddick was a guy when you do like mock drafts and big boards and all that stuff. The goalie names at the top of most people's were him and Byrne. And then like, you know, they played that way kind of throughout the year. And I know people were looking for Kroddick like at Pro Day and stuff like that. The sentiment around Pro Day was like, that kid doesn't need to be here. Like everybody, if you're still looking to see more of Ryan Kroddick, then you haven't been watching lacrosse for the last, you know, month and a half. Like, one more day here at Pro Day isn't going to probably change whatever opinion you formed of Ryan Kroddick by now, particularly after championship weekend. So I think it was, you know, was when it came time for these particular waiver day to process, I think a reason we had such an insane waiver day is that the NCAA tournament just ended. We had a Pro Day. So there's this like giant influx of names that are available and known to these GMs. And all of a sudden it's like an opportunity to do some real tinkering with kids who are just now, you know, won a title or played for a title. And maybe you just saw some guys at Pro Day. So it's like it's not the usual batch of just like a couple of guys coming in for an injury or some roster filler. It was like meaningful stuff happening because we had this additional event and the schedule kind of changing how it did. And I think Kroddick was like a top of mind name for a lot of people. I think the way the day unfolded around him is evidence of just how much he was kind of desired in the process.
No doubt. And Dan, you're all over the trade that got finalized for his services. Can you break down the timeline of what exactly happened from the moment he got claimed to getting sent to Joe Spallina's Redwoods?
So the process is kind of weird. There were a lot of questions. It was like, all right, he got picked up by Denver, and everyone was like, all right, cool. They have McNaney and McElroy. Like, I don't get it, but you can get Ryan Kroddick. Why not? I guess. And then when it was, well, he's going to get traded, the immediate and very fair question for a lot of people was like, well, why didn't those other teams just like sign Ryan Kroddick then? So the way waivers works is after the draft, the waiver order gets set. And then it works like your fantasy football league, where after somebody gets claimed, after somebody, you know, a team puts in a claim for a player, they drop to the bottom of the list. Everybody else goes up a spot. And it's why it's important to pay attention when these moves get made and their league announces or teams announce, hey, we've added this player via waivers versus we've signed this player from free agency. Waivers means they're going to drop down. And like, you know, all the other teams that have pursued Ryan Kroddick had already made claims. And so Denver was this team that hasn't made a waiver claim since the draft. Almost everybody else has. Denver hadn't. So as the other moves were happening, Denver's just kind of sitting there and watching their waiver spot just kind of climb to the, you know, not quite the top, but like near the top of the list. And then they're saying, we might not necessarily have a ton of needs on the roster right now because their roster is really well built, but we can get this goalie that a lot of people are interested in. So let's put a claim on the most popular dude for waiver claims this week, Ryan Kroddick, and then see what we can do. And so they claim him, they get him, and immediately it's the Redwoods are interested. The Water Dogs were another team that I think, you know, went looking and were kind of bidding against the Redwoods there for a while. And ultimately, yeah, Joe Spallina says, I'll give you a first round pick for Ryan Kroddick. And Tim Sudan could say, sure. All I had to do was not make any other moves, climb the waiver priority list for a while and claim this guy that I knew teams would want. And I think, you know, from an optics standpoint, it's probably a little awkward, particularly for Redwoods fans, because you can say, we traded for Dylan Ward like 6 weeks ago, like however long ago the draft was, right? There was the draft day trade to acquire Dylan Ward, and you're like, all right, got a goalie. And then to trade for another goalie today and spend a first round pick to do it, it's a fair question to be like, why are we spending all of our draft capital on acquiring goalies? Like specifically where you seem to just be acquiring goalies. I think you have to consider that Dylan Ward is 35 years old and he is on a deal that expires at the end of this season. He's not signed through beyond 2026. And, you feel like you have a goalie room that now you have your future goalie and your present goalie, or at least somebody to push for time. And, I think, from the Spallina point of view, there's a perspective of next year's draft might not be the draft that everybody thought it would be. And I think that's kind of the mindset for the way some teams are approaching kind of this offseason when it comes to trading their draft capital is, I might not need as many picks next year as people originally thought because of changes in eligibility rules and stuff like that.
Yeah, that is the biggie part for the thinking of California general manager Joe Spallina, who I must admit has likely better knowledge about the 5-5 rule than we do. It's why he is so high about making these trades, making these deals. You pointed it out, trading a third round pick for a 35-year-old on an expiring deal. Everyone was like, okay, it seems like good at value. Trading a first round pick for an undrafted goalie when you just traded for Wardo, he goes
wild. By the way, Matt Note is on the roster, and Matt Note looked really good for them at championship series, and I think it's a guy that they still really like he's sitting there saying, like, I put up Walker saves numbers for you in sixes and it's acquiring goalies left and right.
Anthony Kelly is going out of his way to say how great Matt Note is. Every press conference, every chance he gets. And he's remained on the roster. He was a stud at UMass. And we'll see. It's a goalie battle. So you got three really good options now.
Yeah, the trade at the end of the day, though, Joe Spallina is making a really big bet that this 5-5 thing gives all these kids who are juniors right now or just finished their junior year another season. And that would be, this class that we all thought would be insane. Ben Johnston, Owen Duffy, Sean Light, Cade Millen. Like the draft list for next year was set to be incredible until this rule change came along. And I know, Sean Light was on with Pelkey and that crew for a podcast this week, and he told them, if the thing goes and we get another year, I'm going to take another year. So, it's already a guy where he said it'll be a 2028 guy if they get the year. And I think that's the thing where people are like, are you sure, Joe, that these kids are not going to be there? Because if they are in the draft next year and you traded away your first round pick and all of a sudden Denver's coming out of that first round with like Ben Johnston and Sean Light, then you're looking at like a Nico Harrison trading Luka level move here where people are like, what is this GM doing?
A lot to be decided with I think it's coming to a vote this month in June. I don't have best grasp about the 5-5 inside the cross. We'll have more coverage as we get closer to it, but it is certainly a storyline to follow. Rosie, when Tim Sudan hears all of us just dissecting his three picks for Ivan Plunkett trade, you think he was like just boiling up and like, I'm going to get great value for whatever deal I make next?
Well, I think part of the GM gig is, you do your research and you reach out to a ton of people and you get your warm advice and stuff. But I think a lot of it is fueled by confidence, right? You're making such big swings. You kind of have to believe this is going to work for me. I can move these because I know we said a couple times, it's like, if he feels that he's one goal off from being the champion, then he can worry about that. Get that one additional goal, and then we'll see when it arrives in the case of Evan Plunkett. But you know, take care of all the re-signings and everything like that, keep it all in house, and just kind of like, we've got the squad we need. And I think he's also leaning largely on the youth that he has kind of throughout that organization. Granted, you know, he does have the older, sort of a older side with, like, you know, your Mike Manley. And I guess Bernhard having gone already, you're pretty much just saying you're Mike Manley. But pretty young team. He says, you know, okay, I got a couple cracks at it with these guys as long as I can get them all, you know, secured and bought in and everything like that. So I have to imagine he almost has to not care too much about people who have questions about that kind of thing. You know, I feel like it's a really, really tough job if you do kind of get too caught up on what the internet says or what people such as ourselves think about the picks.
That was our main takeaway with him and Coach Chris Bates, the drafter of the number one pick, Aiden McGuire out of Duke, the short stick defensive midfielder who made his debut at Loyola in week three, and Joey Spallina. So fun little crowbar to the ground on that highlight, but we'll get to all that in a bit. We're still stuck on some player movement news, and you're not going to, you know, Rusty, you hit on why today was such a big, for listeners, today is Tuesday, recording this Tuesday night, why this day was such a busy one for the general managers and coaches. Another reason is because there's been at least three games played. And when you're at least three games into the season, you're going to see some players who haven't been on the active roster, namely Matt Rambo. You know, the Whips are four games now. They're 3-1, or
they have, yeah, they're 3-1. They've played every weekend, yeah. Right? And they had just had a double.
So their bye is in Charlotte, and they're coming off a 2-0 weekend where they were thriving without their inaugural MVP. Rosie, can you describe in words, as only you can, how weird it will be to see Matt Rambo in New York Atlas Blue?
Just optically alone, right? It's just the exact opposite color. Obviously, you guys all realize that red and blue are opposing colors. I'm not breaking any news there. You know, if he went to Philly or something like that, it'd be a little more of a gradual sort of thing. But it's just going to look so, so strange. Especially having only seen him this entire time, running with the Whipsnakes. It's not like, and there's a lot of guys in the league who have played on, you know, three teams, four teams or whatever, you know, maybe you were a inaugural water dog and, you know, then you went to the Cannons or whatever the case may be. But he is a literal day one Whipsnake, you know, just the success he brought to the franchise and success he experienced, you know, by himself, the individual awards and the sort of, you know, team success. He is, you know, that face of that franchise. And now he's going somewhere else where, you know, at this point, he's kind of looking for a job. He was out of work. He was out of work and there's really no way he was going to get back in that rotation in Maryland.
Hashtag open to work on LinkedIn.
Right. Just looking to ball, right? He's just looking to ball. If he got back on the field with the Whipsnakes, it would have been like plan Q or something like that. So many things would have gone so many ways wrong for them to reach down there and say, you know, we need to totally scrap everything we've been building these past couple of years. So, you know, it's a matter of if he's going to keep hanging out there as far sort of like a leadership kind of role, which I think we do see with a lot of players.
On that, you know, very like, team with Jake Bernhard, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can stick around and, you know, they'll need you for your experience, you know, more so like that. Or like, you know, like we saw for the 3 weeks, Brian Phipps just now, you know what? Like they need somebody who's been there and kind of walk the new guys through and, you know, just kind of show everybody the way to be a pro. But if that role is not necessary there and, you know, they've got guys who can do that sort of thing, like they've got Rob Pinnell, you know, if you're looking for one guy who can kind of help, you know, teach the young guys how to be a pro in that offense, you don't necessarily need to lean on Matt Rambo for that. You got some other guys who can do that. So, you know, if he's going to try to play, he's got to go somewhere else to do it. And this spot just happens to open up, you know, with the New York Atlas, and it's going to look entirely different from anything we've seen him previously do. But it's, I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, exactly what he can do still.
Dan, the report came out as we were at Pro Day while watching some pretty exceptional lefties there that we'll get into. And then, you know, we see another game where New York Atlas go stale for a little bit. Mostly they didn't have the ball for long stretches of that third quarter when Denver pulls away in the title game rematch. And, you know, they've been sticking with Reed Bowering down there. The two-man game with Levi Anderson had some flashes of success. What was your reaction when you reported the deal going with Matt Rambo? Do you think Rambo?
Like, that was one of those where I had to check it with, like, you know, you always check it with, like, a few people to make sure it's legit and everything. That was one where I'm like, I'm finding even more people to tell me that this is real. Like, this just didn't feel real. I do hope that, and I know, like, I love Jay Moore and Jerry Maguire saying it ain't show friends, it's show business. So, Rambo seeing his time end with the Maryland Whipsnakes via, you know, unrostered player movement, like waiver claim, it's a little to me like it's kind of a bummer to see it end that way. At the end of the day, like you said, he was the MVP of the league in 2019. He hit a game winner in OT to give the Whipsnakes a championship. You know, so I hope at some point we do see the nice, like, farewell, thank you, Matt, post from Maryland Social. Maybe that came out and I haven't seen it yet, but I hope he gets, like, you know, one of those. But I was surprised, but it was clearly, I think, over for Rambo there after that Friday night game where the Whips played some of the best offense I think we've seen and since the PLL launched. Like, their offense was absolutely humming and looked incredible. You know, Stags in the post game was talking about, look, for a while in the PLL, offenses were built with this idea that you need big physical wing dodgers, and that's how a lot of teams were trying to build their offenses. And so, you know, for him at that time, it was like, all right, we do it with Zed, we do it with Matt. And defenses adjusted to that. Stags pointed out defenses adjusted by getting these bigger, stronger physical poles that could match up well with guys like that. And, you know, you had to start pivoting. And that's what they've been doing this last few years, is building towards this offense around guys like TJ Malone and, you know, now Joey Spallina and Rob Pinnell. Still, his skill set is still perfect for what they're trying to do, where it's a lot of rapid player movement, rapid ball movement, not a lot of, you know, isolation from the wings. And so with them being built that way, it was clear that, you know, Rambo didn't necessarily have as much of a place there. But Alice, I guess, makes a little more sense in the sense in the way that Jeff Teed isn't playing for them this year and they need a lefty attackman. I think I would imagine they like, and I think I would like Reed Bowering much more out of the midfield for them. I think he's more effective there. And, you know, Rambo gives them a lefty attackman that can, you know, try and help maybe with some of the dodging responsibilities, some of the dodging reps that are needed from that side of the field. And you see what you get. You know, as Rosie pointed out when he said, like, this is, you know, a 3 weeks inactive, so he's been claimed by New York. He has to go into the roster right away. He will be on the field for New York this weekend. Like, he's going to play this weekend. So you're going to see kind of right away what the plan is. But I was definitely surprised to see his as a name that was moving. I thought he was one of those retire or Whipsnake kind of guys. That was the way I thought his time would end, was, you know, on his terms, hanging it up with Maryland. But, you know, again, like, it's just kind of the way pro sports is, where he didn't have a spot on that team anymore and another team needed him and they take him and they don't care what we would like the narrative and what the ride off into the sunset, what we might want it to look like for Rambo. He's going to go over there and he's going to probably finish his career with the Atlas. So, you know, he's commenting on social posts underneath that he's pumped to get in the mix and pumped to start playing. So I hope we see an energetic, a rejuvenated, a fired up Matt Rambo who's pumped to be on the field for somebody. So, you know, he's going to be out there this weekend, and it's going to be something. I'll tell you, it's going to be something.
Yeah, you know, we haven't seen him in a while, but I do remember Jim Stagnita talking about him during training camp. And, you know, we'll see on Friday the degree to which this was, you know, him being nice or, you know, actually genuinely being impressed. But, you know, he was commenting on, you know, how he was doing exactly what he needed to do, how he was playing at a, you know, at a really great level that maybe he hadn't seen in a little while. So, yeah, you know, there's definitely going to be a certain element of fuel, right? I'm sure Matt would like to prove to, if nobody else, himself, you know, that he can get back out there and make something happen. So, you know, maybe Stags, despite not protecting him on the roster, is certainly impressed by what he still can bring to the table.
Kind of a great situation for him to do so, right? You're kind of playing with house money, you're out of the lineup, and you go into a team who also picked up another lefty. We'll get to in a minute. If you guys can, I had some conflicting intel where, all right, so before the pro day, this was kind of right after the draft. Usually after the draft, you get this sort of heavy action of picking up unclaimed or undrafted players, rather, on the waiver wire. That had to wait until after pro day because they wanted to see who could make pro day. And then as we went along, there came in a stipulation that, all right, if you're going to play him right away, similar to how we just explained with Matt Rambo, then you can claim him. Am I explaining that right?
Yeah, the waiver claim, the undrafted players who are on waivers, if you claimed one of them, you had to play them immediately. Which,
like,
is
Jack Pilling played right away for Maryland. There's
right, Sean Brown right into the net for the Water Dogs. Yeah, they got to be in on your game day roster. You don't have to like start them in the case of Byrne or whatever, but you know they got to be on your 19 man right away. Unless, I guess, I don't know if like the Cannons found a way to skirt it by picking up McMeekin via waivers and then immediately putting him on the pup list. But I you know, it's supposed to be
you throw
at a guy, you have to play him right away.
He's hurt. Don't question it, man.
Oh, no, you're hurt. You didn't know.
Yeah. He has sunglasses on. He can't play.
Squatted 1,000 pounds and he needs a couple red saves. He will be fun, as we will get to, because Coach Brian Holman just released Zach Tucci, and we'll surely see him off the pup list sooner than later. Unless they're not dressing the face-off guy like it's 2023. So before we get to that, though, we're going order as what I have it in this recap here. So a guy who I'm not sure your impressions, Dan, but for me showing up the second half of Pro Day, didn't do as much as I would have liked, but he was kind of in that Ryan Kroduk camp. This is Hunter Drillin I'm talking about. In that camp of, all right, if you haven't seen him ball out his whole Colgate career, like what else do you need to see and how he can fit into your PLL offense? So you're a guy, let's pick him up. Kind of another lefty to throw out there if you're looking for more options. With Reed Bowering, Levi Anderson, I believe Kyle Jackson's still on the roster. So
they released Kyle Jackson.
They released
like Kyle back. I mean, need a lefty. Why not?
No, they all need him. They got Hunter Drillin now. And the one of the best, not for this player, but on social media, parts about that deal was to dig him that they had to release a player. And it ended up having to be short stick defensive midfielder Cooper Frankenheimer, who was signed through the 27 season just on Monday. So it's a cutthroat business. Some interesting pairings there. Do you think Hunter Drillin will get a fair shot at cracking the game day here?
I think he'll get a shot. I think you guys see what he has. I'm with you. Or at Pro Day, when I saw him as an attendee at Pro Day, I immediately thought, okay, I'm going to be impressed. I thought during his Colgate career, he was really, really great. I, you know, thought he had a potential to maybe get, you know, to be a guy who got drafted during the draft. He was one of those guys where I was like, if there were five rounds, he would have gone. You know, he was one of those type of players. But on Pro Day, I found myself saying, like, he's okay. He took some shots that I thought were like, you might be able to take that in a Patriot League game, in a PLL game, that shot's a turnover. You know what I mean? Like those kind of things. So, you know, like the athleticism, I think, was there. I think he was one of the guys where it was like, maybe you haven't had the stick in your hands, or you haven't played as recently as some of the other guys that are here because your season ended, you know, without making the NCAA tournament. Some of these other guys have been playing, you know, much more recently. So sometimes maybe you got to kick that off a little bit, but I think he'll get a chance there just because they have such a need on that side of the field. You know what I mean? Like if you've got Rambo to play the lefty attack spot, you can always use another, but I think Drew and projects as a midfielder anyway. The athleticism is there. And if he could just play kind of smart within the offense, then like he'll find a little role there for himself. At a minimum, I think if he puts quality play on tape, there's other teams that need some offensive help too, that maybe don't have the depth that, you know, New York at their best has,
right?
That will be able to look at this and be like, if they cut that guy loose, let's give him a look over here. So I think there's going to be an opportunity for him to certainly impress. He did not dominate Pro Day. I'll just say that. Like, you know, I thought, you know, he would be, I thought he would be making plays like Kyle Lewis was making, where you watch it and you'd be like, why is that guy here? Like, we already know, like, you don't need to be playing today. I was expecting some of that with Hunter Drew, and I didn't get too many of those. So, I think he's a quality player, and I think he'll, again, like, have an opportunity to impress and stick even on a roster as good as New York's. But you know, it was a guy that I certainly thought would be, maybe in super high demand on a day like today. But ends up with New York.
Kyle Lewis, without doubt, was the best player at Pro Day in terms of playmaking and overall athleticism. Philadelphia drafted him and sent him to Pro Day to make everyone else laugh and be like, haha, look who we got. They release LSM Malik Sparrow, who obviously has that history with Phil Tierney at Denver, and goalie Tim Trautner to get him on that 25-man. He'll be really exciting. I think we can kind of start to marry these with the week three results, right? Like, Philadelphia is coming off a second straight, very disappointing offensive game where they only put up 8 goals, and one goal scored by the midfield, Thomas McConvey, getting that one. Excuse me. And, you know, you got all these options that they drafted, like Josh Yago gets his debut, Matt Collison is still probably working for some Canadian visas, and we'll see when he can start to crack the lineup. But to have this type of athleticism in the lineup is never a bad thing, except when you already have maybe like Jack Hanna and like all these other, like, how do you guys expect Philly to start gelling these offensive pieces?
I mean, I guess I think what makes Kyle Lewis an attractive piece for them right away is, you know, in post game after last week, right, they score 8 goals. Like you said, they only get one from the midfield. McConvey is the only midfielder who scores. Naturally, Coach Tierney gets asked about that in post game, like, how are you going to get more out of your midfield? And he points out, look, the way our offense kind of flows and works is that our attackmen are going to get most of our shots. Like, it's meant to flow towards them, to, they're the guys who are finishing the ball. Which, like, fine, neither here nor there. I'm not an OC, and I'm not here to like say they're doing it wrong or right or whatever. But if that is the way your offense is designed, Kyle Lewis is an exceptional passing midfielder. He's very explosive at like, and can shed his man and free his hands very easily. But a lot of the plays we saw on Pro Day, the most impressive ones were ones where he was throwing feet, finding attackmen either, you know, on the doorstep or in places where they could kind of quickly attack a dodge again and dodge a defender who was closing out or his feet weren't set. So Kyle Lewis is a good option for them because he's like a pass first midfielder, which is a little bit different from a guy like You know, Connor Kelly is going to be out there as a guy who can shoot, who can pull it from two. Jack Hanna is a great at kind of being evasive, but kind of getting towards his own shot. And you know, an offense with those guys, you know, creating towards a pass is maybe not playing to necessarily what their best strength is. Not things they can't do, but what they're really great at is shooting or scoring. Kyle Lewis can be a great passer in the PLL. And so that kind of additional wrinkle is nice. I don't know if they'll get, you know, we didn't mention Silas Richmond is coming for them. And I don't know if their plan for him is the midfield, but like, at least you also know he's a guy who can pass. He's a guy who can kind of get the ball to people and get the ball to your attack. So to me, in a perfect world, there's balance to your offense. I kind of pointed out that if you look at that Whips Friday night game as like gold standard of PLL offense, their starting attack had less than half of the team's touches on offense. And it's the flip. Basically, the reverse happened for the Water Dogs in their loss on Saturday night. Their attack had like 57% of the team's touches. So I feel like you need to find some balance. And if you can get some kind of distribution and get some midfield scoring, it would be good. I don't know if there's a world where maybe Miles Jones shows up in the lineup this week, again, as a guy who could pass out of the midfield and is on their roster and has not played yet. You know, it's his name hasn't necessarily come up. I think at this point he might even be like, you know, a Matt Rambo eligible, claimable guy. I got to see if the Water Dogs have played three games, then he's been inactive for all of them and probably would be. But it's you know, finding ways to, if the offense, again, if the idea and the design is it flows to our attack so they can be the finishers. So Sowers, Kirst, and McArdle can be the finishers. Then you need to get some midfielders into your lineup who are just better at passing the ball than the guys they have out there right now.
We will be keeping our antennas up for, because general manager Dave Cottle's got some trade capital. He's got some assets to get on the move. And, you know, if he's buying any of the Spallina sauce up there, then maybe he's trading for some 28 picks. Rosie, you're about to say something?
Yeah, no, basically, kind of, I'll just attach on to what you were just saying about Dave Cottle. You know, the concern about how are you going to approach this midfield given the guys that you already have in the lineup. That's something that Dave Cottle, you know, he just kind of recently showed up. So I'm not sure the degree of allegiance he has to the people who are currently in place if they're not producing. You know, I mean, he could look at, you know, if you want to tell him, oh, well, they produced last year or they produced two or three years ago, give him a chance. Maybe that's something he cares about. Maybe that's something he's not really concerned with. Bringing a general manager, even one who is, you know, obviously longtime friends with the head coach or something like that. But, you know, effectively, sometimes it is bringing in a bad cop, right? And so, yes, you know, we've seen, say, Jack Hanna, for example, do some incredible things over these years. But we've also seen him not put up any points in the past two games. So we don't know how long the leash is from the front office. Now it is different sort of patience or allegiance or something like that. And, you know, Dave Cottle might be like, okay, listen, we're going to switch a couple things up because I can make those moves. So we'll see. He might be inclined to do some shaking up in that regard, just not having the Water Dog roots like Bill Tierney and the rest of that lineup.
Starting to become, like, the, was it 2 years ago, Bill Tierney's first season, where we would come on this podcast every week, Rosie, and I'd be like, nah, Water Dogs are the best team still. Like, they're losing every game, but just wait till the playoffs. And they, of course, did not make the playoffs, get the number one pick, pick CJ Kirst, have this loaded roster now, and they are still losing two in a row. I think they'll turn it around. I want to jump through rapid fire, a couple quick updates before swinging back to you guys, because I think they're notable pickups, but I just want to get to some other topics here. First, the Utah Archers picked up one of the other big standouts from Pro Day and Aiden O'Neill, a guy I'm really fond of from visiting Richmond in the fall and getting to watch a lot of his game. The one thing that he would even admit for the pro level is, you know, he's not the fastest guy. He that's why he has built so much skill with both hands that even I was like, are you lefty or righty? And he's actually a right-hander, if you can believe that, and with how much he puts it in his left, depending on the matchup. So they are very much struggling on offense. You know, like two games when you only put up 5 goals, you stick Aiden O'Neill in there. I don't know if he's solving that, but a worthy player to try it out regardless. Arrestor, you reported that John Dunphy, he is headed to the Denver Outlaws. I think that's a great pickup with his twitchiness and just a great breakout year as a senior. You know, Pete Bonanno goes down with a hamstring injury and misses the majority of the season. So he's in an elevated role and just puts up 39 points. You saw him in the title game ball out, send that Notre Dame poor guy to the turf. Or the natural grass, rather, in Scott Stadium. And I am, so to get your guys' takes on this, the whole Boston situation is very intriguing to me. It's made the airwaves among other podcasts, the Asher Nolting. Is he injured? Is he not? Is he getting benched? We can all say for a fact that Coach Brian Holman did opt for Brian Kelly at X Attack the last 3 games out of preference. And, you know, Brian Kelly had a great pro debut. 5 points, dazzling. They put up 19 goals against the Water Dogs. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't go as well. But speaking to Marcus Holman after the game, he's like, yeah, it's kind of like I said earlier, we barely had the ball for that run that the other team went on. And, you know, they pick up Andrew McMeekin that we discussed. They have LSM Voldonovan and Jack Regnery through the draft, who were added to their 25 man. Rosie, what do you make of Boston's offensive situation in terms of where do they go from here?
Well, so I think the situation that Boston is facing this year kind of has a lot to do with the absence of Ryan Drenner, to be honest with you. I feel like he was kind of a get you like 1-1 or 2-1 every game and kind of smooth over the cracks that might have been otherwise exposed. And so I feel like he was kind of a domino. His absence has kind of shined a light on the rest of this situation here. I feel like they're kind of in a spot similar to the Archers from a mindset standpoint, where you're kind of like, well, look, I got to try something, you know? And the Asher Nolting situation is it's interesting, kind of like what Dan was saying about the Rambo situation. You know, the league evolving, you know, maybe his style may not be quite so conducive to putting up big numbers as it used to be. You know, probably have to look at some games last year again to figure out when it kind of started showing signs. Because this year, you know, I presume it's not just a one game decision, right? The game one for him against Carolina was not his best work. Had some turnovers that, you know, probably want to pass out of instead of running into like some double team situations like that. From a coaching standpoint, I imagine those would be even the more frustrating kinds from someone you trust as your quarterback. You know, if you're say trying to jam a pass through double coverage, that's one thing. It's basically putting up an interception. And, you know, well, you shouldn't have done that. But if your quarterback is Asher Nolting and he's saying, you know, well, let me trust my legs to get me out of this situation, you say, well, we didn't bring you in here for your legs in the first place. So you kind of have a bit more of a problem on your hands there. So, yeah, I think they're at a spot where they're just kind of, I don't want to say hitting a reset, but kind of hitting a soft reset. So, you know, kind of put in a couple more pieces there. The Kellys, and they were both fantastic in that first game. And not just fantastic, but fearless. You know, they both played like they'd been there. You know, obviously Mick had been there before, but Brian played like he'd been there for a long time. You know, if you're tossing like behind the back feeds and hitting the points and things like that, you don't have to worry about getting too overwhelmed by the moment. So it doesn't seem like a situation where Brian Holman that next day would have been like, you know, thanks for your help. Now let's go back to what I was so frustrated by in the first place. So now I think it's kind of in a situation where, you know, these are the people he's bringing to the dance and those are who he's going to dance with. It's going to be very interesting to see where Asher goes from here, career-wise or geographically speaking from here on out. I don't really know. I don't really know what the future looks like for him.
So I have two thoughts and I want to get your thoughts on Dan in reaction to what Rosie said. First, I think the Drenner shout out is a good one, and I'm really excited to see how they can incorporate Logan Ipp into this offense because they can use him anywhere. Well, above the cage, Mosa. He's not a super invert midi guy, but he is going to produce at the pro level. We know that, and I want to see them go back to Ashton at least one more time. I want to see if this lit a fire under him and how well he can play his way into kind of better shape or what have you, I guess, going forward. And if not, then are you putting Ty Kurtz down there? Are you putting Mikey Weisar? What is the option? Because if not, like, you got to be calling Cottle up and be like, all right, give me one of your playmakers. I can click down to the tech.
Give me Jake Taylor. You know, when I think when it comes to Asher, there's the is he hurt or is he not? I think is like we asked Coach Holman after the game in Baltimore, you know, tough offensive output this week. Do you think you might look at going back to Asher? Do you think you might, you know, try and find ways to get him back in the lineup? And there was an opportunity there for Coach Holman to say, well, he's hurt, so, you know, we can't go with him right now. And he did not say that. He said, Brian Kelly's really dialed into our offense, and we really like what we have, which is not the most subtle way in the world to say we're kind of moving on from Asher Nolting here. But that's honestly, it's crazy how fast things happen in the PLL, right? Like, Asher comes in 2022.
I don't want to suggest that I'm like anti-Brian Kelly after
for sure game. For sure yeah I mean, you know, Asher's rookie of the year finalist and his rookie year, he's an MVP finalist for two straight years after that. Last year he leads the league in assists, and this year he's a healthy scratch twice in three games, and that's just like the way the PLL is. He had some turnovers, yeah, in that first game, but that's also just kind of like just who he is. Like, in the last 4 years, he's been top five in the league in turnovers three times. You know, he's like, he's going to turn the ball over. But, you know, I think for the Cannons, I want to see Logan Ipp, to your point. I want to see Jack Regnery as a guy who, you know, I want to see the Cannons play faster. And Regnery, because he comes from Tufts, is a guy who wants to play at mega hyper speed all the time. So I think a guy who's used to and wants to play with some pace, I think will be good. I didn't see that Cannons game coming, by the way. I went to Cannons practice the night before, and I thought they looked great in practice. They looked dialed, and they like they were like a team that looked like they were ready to play. So I did not see that kind of
practice.
Like, dude, going to practice is the best thing in the world. Anyway, I think the Cannons are going to be okay. I don't know if we're going to see Asher again, though. I really don't. If you're Utah, do you pick up? I'll put it to you. Do you pick up the phone and see what the price tag would be for Asher Nolting?
That's a much better fit than, you know, sticking Aiden O'Neill in there and asking him to fix our whole offense here is tough. And Asher Nolting is at worst, temporary solution for when Grant Amen and Matt Moore come back to the lineup, you know? So I think that's a good shout out that you might have to
at least, you know, you're getting somebody who's pass first, who's going to be trying to throw the ball to Mac O'Keefe and trying to, you know, throw the ball to Trey LeClaire and guys who are going to shoot the hell out of the ball. So I don't know if there's like, if he's that on the outs, then maybe, you know, the price tag might be pretty low because, you know, he's a guy who's been healthy scratched and you can see what you can do. And Maybe you get on that Joe Spallina Kool-Aid and say these picks next year don't mean anything anyway. You can just be the PLL LA Rams and just deal all the picks. F them picks, baby. We're just playing for a ring.
It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't matter. Okay. All right. So you bring up a good point. Rosie, what do you think about this? Because if you stick astronauting on the archers, could you... Oh, where was I going with that? I had the best, like, three-team solution. Okay. Relating to this, like, so the reason I think astronauting is maybe struggling now, right? Like, if we're looking at him being such a pass-first player, do we think defenses are playing him to score first? And if so, can we relate that to the Whip Snakes, kind of the game one where they were so fun to watch, such pretty ball movement where everyone was getting in and out of their sticks versus game two? Rosie, did you see a change in how the defense played Maryland? With, did they make them try to dodge the score a little more after watching the Friday film?
Well, yeah, Jim Stagnita definitely kind of indicated after the game that the archers presented a bit of a different defensive approach than to what they were, I guess the way he put it is, able to get away with in their first thing around. But, you know, putting a little bit more on tape, obviously. Granted, you did, I would say probably a bit more what they had to, I guess, kind of worry about is when you switch on a big little and when you want to fight through it or something like that. As far as the Whip Snakes go, we actually saw a bit of that with Joey Spallina and, you know, switching to big littles there. And then you go short stick on Spallina. And that is something he was very comfortable with in the first game. Second game, you did mention the Crowfar incident with McGuire, but I think they were a little more...
In what position Utah's got confidence in? That's, yeah, that their stories.
Yeah, so I think they did approach things a little bit differently, but kind of remarkable sort of sense that I think Matt Dunn mentioned after the game was, he's like, you know, sometimes they'll just have these low scoring games, and you know, Brett Dobson being in cage certainly helps out with the Archers with that, but you know, Matt Dunn and that defense were kind of able to kind of go toe to toe with the additional defensive challenges that Utah was presenting as well. So, you know, it's kind of good the way that worked out, in my opinion, that weekend, that they were able to have, you know, a giant offensive day and then turn things around. And when things weren't working so well on that offense, they were still able to find a way to win.
Arrestra, rapid fire answer here, because I do want to get some other thoughts. You've seen Brian Kelly for two games. They just signed Jack Regnery. Regnery versus Kelly, who would you rather see week four?
I'd rather see Regnery in the midfield and keep BK at attack. I don't know if they have to choose between those two guys. I am eager to see Regnery in the lineup, though. I think they kind of need to see what they have, too. You know, you spent the pick on a D3 guy where sometimes you feel like you're taking a little more of a flyer because he doesn't play against quite as many guys you would expect to be future pros. But I hope I see both. It's a cop-out answer, but I hope I see them both in the lineup. I hope I see Kelly at attack and Regnery in the midfield.
He's pretty similar to Ty Kurtz in that, like, he's as a PLL midfielder a little bit, like finisher, can play make. Can do a little bit of everything, but you expect him to be the one time in room, maybe. So it'll be interesting to see how they coexist. Moving on, we're almost an hour into the podcast. I have an article due on InsideTheCross.com tomorrow about the best players in the month of May. Previously, you fans have loyally been reading the team of the week every time that I put it out. This year, we're putting out team of the month, starting with the team of May. And I want to get your thoughts on some players who I believe were the best to do it this month. starting with defense, I think it comes down to, and in between the pipes specifically, I think it goes down to two players, either the leader in save percentage, Emmett Carroll, or I think the clear choice is New York Atlas goalie, Liam Entman. Any disagreements with Entman following his 20 save to display in the title game rematch?
I think it would be Entman. I think when you do this, you have to keep in mind that it's kind of about the player's individual achievement, and you kind of have to set the result aside. I know the Atlas didn't play the best game on the field outside of the goal, but their chance to win in that game was like the result of Liam Entman being absolutely ridiculous. So I would take him. He's actually, man, he's like plus 2000 on DraftKings right now for MVP. Not an insane thing to throw a dollar at. We've had an MVP be a goalie before. He's putting up some just bonkers numbers. We might have to get over the fact that like the win loss record might not be dominant or whatever. It hasn't been great so far for New York, but man, hard to look at that guy and not think he's the best in the business.
Couldn't win a Tourton, though. Rosie, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm inclined to agree. In the words of Mike Pressler, thank God for Liam Entman. Because, I mean, in a league where even if you're, you know, running into some tough losses, you still kind of have that score differential that is definitely going to come into play at some point, you know, be it making the playoffs versus missing the playoffs, be it draft order, whatever the case may be. It is always in the back of the head. And, I mean, a game like we saw them playing this past weekend against Denver, you know, you look at, like, mediocre goalie play, you know, decent goalie play, and they easily could have lost by twice as many goals. And I'm not even exaggerating to say that would have been, like, reasonable with a mediocre job in the pipe. So, yeah, I have no objections there going with Entman.
Moving on to the close defense, now that I aced my goalie pick, the Utah Archers aren't deserving of a lot of players. On defense, they're deserving of some good standouts here, and I'm torn on whether to give them two players or one. I'm such a Mitchell Dunham fan, and I'm very happy to see him so far tied with Ajax Apotello with 8 calls turnovers at the league. At the top of the league leaderboard for the players. But Brendan Lavelle getting the top matchups, it's kind of a philosophical question. What do you value more? Then I have Ajax Apotello, and Ben Randall has been awesome for his first few Outlaws games. Arrestor, who are you going with close defense-wise out of that group? Are you... Any other guys I didn't mention? Lavelle versus Dunham. Where are you thinking?
I love Mitchell Dunham too. I remember watching him at Mount St. Mary's being like, that kid, my goodness. You gotta watch more Mount games. Then he was at Richmond and he was just dominant there. But I am inclined to go with Lavelle. For the reason you mentioned, he guards top matchup and he does it so incredibly well. And like, right now, Utah's path to win games is Lavelle erases somebody and Brett Dobson's Brett Dobson. And then, you know, you hope maybe you can get to 10 goals. You know, you hope you can try and get to double digits. And that's like your path to win is lean on those two guys. And even with all that kind of on his shoulders, I think Lavelle's up to it. So I think he's been awesome. And then Ajax, yeah, has been maybe the best defender in the league for me so far. It really is kind of impressive how well that Maryland defense kind of comes together. I think like having Matt Dunn is kind of, you know, it puts that team in a class on its own, because there's just nobody out there with a combination of him as like a great cover guy and then just like a great leader, and then Timmy Muller being your kind of communicator and Ajax being a cause turnover and also a guy who can just guard top matchup. The trio of them is special. So sometimes it's hard to separate out one, but you know, Ajax is the guy where it's, if you could say about somebody, he always wins the Connor Schellenberger matchup, then like, you're never really going to be wrong about putting him on a team of the week. he relishes those matchups the most. And congrats to Ajax on his promotion to D coordinator at Dartmouth too. But you know, I think for me, Lavelle and Ajax would be the two guys I would start with out of that group for a team of the week or team of the
Rosie, what are your impressions of Ben Randall, Ben?
Well, before I go to Randall, I want to cast a quick vote and gum up the works with Mitchell Dunham because the fantasy numbers-wise that he put up those first 2 weeks, you know, well, first two games, I should say, kind of kicking off the Utah season there, also without Dobson and Cage yet, or, you know, with that first couple of games, figuring things out without Hasek being in the mix. I was more impressed by what he was able to do during that quick sort of turnaround where, you know, the other things weren't in place the way they were last year with the guys in that lineup. So, you know, facing a team like the Outlaws in that kind of environment, I was particularly, you know, and maybe part of it is just kind of knowing what Brendan Lavelle has already kind of established as his baseline. But I was particularly impressed by Dunham, seeing what he was doing in a game like against Denver, where, you know, you have to worry about Bernhardts and the O'Neills, and, you know, you don't necessarily have the safety net of Dobson back there in goal. No Washuta shade when I say that, though.
nor should he take it as such. I think you have me sold on Dunham over Ben Randall, so I think I'm going Dunham, Mitch Dunham, the Mount Richmond box goalie legend, and Lavelle and Zapatello. Long stick midfielder wise is where I struggled most, where I'll have to lean on you guys. Short stick defense midfielders, the unsung players of the league. So I'll go to the unsung person of this podcast, Chris Rosenthal. Rosie, I had Ryan Tarasenko. I think he's only played in the one game.
Yeah, see, that's
the trick. So impressive, man. He was so impressive. He's directing people up top there. Sudan's freaking loving him. He's clearing the ball like crazy, and he's freaking starting transition. So I think he's, like, when you only play three games, he has a shout. And my other two that he would have to be over would be Bo Pettersson or Ray Durth.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
This is very tough. Yeah, the one game certainly hurts Terry's chances there, but it was one impactful performance during that one game. I'll say this. Bo Pettersson in Utah, I thought was especially... I remember watching him thinking like, oh, okay, so this is the dream scenario that Chris Bates was kind of describing when he was saying kind of how this is all going to work, you know, as far as the D mid bonanza he plans on rolling out, you know? So I will say that I would go between them, and I guess, you know, if Terry shows up in one other game, I almost inherently hand it to him. He was busy taking the Halifax Thunderbirds to the championship. So
sorry for your loss.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So yeah, I mean, I would go with Bo as my nominee out of those, just due to small sample size for Terry so far.
I dig it. Restra, any LSM takes? Who's been the best LSM in your eyes through first quarter, first third, first month of the season?
It's kind of tough to say, you know. I mean, it depends on how you judge your LSMs. That's always kind of like the fun of this thing is like, are you the guy who's looking for cost turnovers? Are you looking for the guy who's going to score goals, win matchups, the guy who does all of those things? It can be like kind of an adventure to arrive at that. I think Jake Pisano has been really good. I think Ethan Rawl has been, you know, pretty solid for Boston, and he's always going to have kind of the numbers to be there. So I think a place where I'm looking, and he's not going to win like player of the month or anything, but Billy Dwan playing LSM is funny, man. We were watching that game on Friday night, and we were up there and Ty Zander's in the press box with us. And I looked at Ty and I was like, has Billy Dwan did he play pole in high school? And I was like, cause I mean, I was trying to like in my mind get back to when has he ever played pole before? And Ty said, no, the best we'd come up with was like maybe club ball or in like middle school. Maybe he took some runs there or something like that. But I think his skill set is kind of like PLL LSM. Like he covers really well, but like you can see he loves to run the field. Like between the lines in college is where he really seemed like where he loved to be. So he's a guy I'm watching kind of, I think, at LSM as the year goes on. I don't think he's ever going to be in a spot where he's bumping any of Dunn, Muller, or Zapatello out from down low. So like it's where he's going to be. And it's if he can thrive there, I think he's a fun name to watch at the LSM.
He is, and you saw it with all the flashes up in the dome, right? Like all the transition that he ran, and especially his last 2 years at Syracuse, you could tell he'd be a natural fit, roam in the middle of the field. Seeing him and Owen Grant in the same field, I know Owen Grant, my 302 legend as a Delaware Blue Hen, is playing more close these days, taking those top assignments. So I'm sure he was looking at Duan like, oh, man, I could be making those plays as well. So leading Ethan Raw, but some good takes out of you, Dan. Going right to face-offs. I think purely for getting the polar bear, Pete Alonso, after walking off a game to come straight to Loyola. Connor Farrell's got to be. No, Connor Farrell has been off to a great start, though. Second in faceoffs won, second in faceoff percentage. Trevor Baptiste has only played the one game. Connor Farrell's at 55%. He has won 39 faceoffs, 70 taken. So just a. I've been joking a few times on this podcast with Rosie, like, oh, it's great. The missing piece really is needed. Connor Farrell, like the milkman.
He's been in Buffalo the whole time.
So any takes why he shouldn't be the face-off man team of the month guy?
I don't think there's a reasonable case for anybody else. I mean, You could maybe throw in like a TD Erlen, because TD, he's only played the two games, but he's been so good in the two games. But I think Farrell being like his numbers are where they are. And the knock with Farrell, and really the thing that I think ended up like knocking him out of the league, was that after he won, sometimes he turned the ball over, or now with a 32 second clock, he wasn't like super efficient in getting into the offense and getting off the field and all that stuff. He's turned the ball over three times in three games. And he's like, you know, I don't think he's taking a shot. Like he's not forcing himself towards the net to get a shot. He's winning it and he's getting to a teammate. He's getting off. So like that thing that people tagged on him to say, it's not a PLL faceoff man anymore because he can't sort this part out. Like he's sorted it out. And whenever Stathicus gets healthy, he's doing all you could ask Farrell to do, which is he's going to make it really hard for them to make a decision about which guy's going to keep that job. The guy who had it before, or is Farrell done enough to keep it? And if it's me, if Philly lets him go, there's a team that needs in this league somewhere. There's a team that needs Connor Farrell, whether it's Boston because they just cut Tucci, if the Beacon isn't all the way healthy or doesn't work out, or whoever it might be. If it's you know, Maryland, if Nardella's not that close to getting back, Connor Farrell has been the best faceoff guy to me in the first month of the season and should be on somebody's 19 man for the rest of the year.
Rosie, do you think Bill Tierney is calling Dave Cottle up and be like, listen, man, you're giving me too many tough choices here in this lineup. Like, can you take it easy with some of these awesome pickups that you're giving me?
See, this is the old Cottle bad cop situation presenting itself once again. You got, you know, Stathicus is like, yeah, but that's my boy. And Cottle's like, yeah, well, guess what? I don't care. And he might just keep bringing in Farrell. And Farrell has performed quite well. Their first game against the Whipsnakes, he just was stringing together win after win. I thought it was a real, real pivotal part to why they pulled off the victory in that one. So yeah, you know, this is another one of those things that, you know, Dave Colley used to say, sorry, Bill Turner used to say, keep him up at night, right? So that's going to be one of those decisions when it does happen. And now he's got somebody in there who can, you know, make that phone call one way or another.
Oh, what a luxury that is. And, you know, offensive midfield, I'm going to be a little more lame. I'm picking the top three offensive midfield scorers, but I think they're all worthy of the acclaim that comes with being on such a honorable team of the month list. And Aiden Carroll, Ryan Cosfield, not only do they lead the midfielders in scoring, but they lead the league in scoring, 13 and 12 points respectively. And you get down to Adam Poitras, who kind of does a little bit of everything for the Whip Snakes, that little Zach Currier understudy off the wings of face-offs. Any guys that you would throw out there? I'll go Rosie, and then Dan, I'll go to you for attack. Rosie, any midfielders that I'm missing out of those three that deserve a shout?
I don't think there's any that are bumping the guys you have out of that lineup. I think Brian Costabile, either by just, you know, the way that maybe he's just feeling this season, or maybe the sense of having to do more with Jeff T out of the lineup, has really kind of taken the reins, you know, just kind of generated his own shot a lot more. And you can really tell that he is kind of steering the ship in that midfield right now. So yeah, no, I would not bump anybody out of there. I would be inclined to give yet another shout out to Colin Heacock, just because I was really impressed by the way he is found a way to kind of evolve over the years and be the guy that Maryland needs him to be at this precise moment, which is not at all, you know, Costabile-like, which is not, you know, give me the ball and let me do some, you know, north-south dodging, but it's just kind of, you know, I'll be the last guy to touch the ball. So I'll give a shout-out to him, but I'm not saying he should bump out anyone else there.
Good shout-out. Nice BTB over the weekend, and I'm going to have to do the same for attack. I think it's the top three scorers at the attack position are TJ Malone for the Whip Snakes, are Jared Bernhardt is the, they're all at 11 points here, and Colter Maxey with his couple two-pointers, I would keep in there over Logan Wisnowskis after his six-goal game. I think it's more of a Wisnowskis one game, great game. First, Mackesy's kind of been that steady Eddie for Boston. Dan, would you put Sowers or Connor? Can't really put Connor Fields. Anyone else on this team of the month attack line?
I mean, I know it's mostly the one game, but I think you do have to consider at least Wisnowskis. He's shooting 76%. Like, it's like a hilarious number. He's put 11 shots on goal and 10 of them have gone in. Like, it's just like a bonkers level of efficiency coming from him. I will speak in defense of Brendan O'Neill. I know he is shooting a downright hilarious 7% right now. Like, 7 is pretty unheard of. But, like, man, he's throwing some assists out there. He's throwing some dimes. I kind of wrote about it a little bit this week where it's like he's not scoring, but he has as many assists as Sowers and Pinnell right now. He's at the top of the league. The league assist leaders right now are Michael Sowers, Rob Pinnell, Brendan O'Neill, and Joey Spallina. Like, what a time to be alive. But I think Brendan deserves some credit for when he's not shooting well, he's still finding ways to dominate. And you always expect Brendan O'Neill to dominate via like giant sweeping dodge that results in an unbelievable shot. And that's kind of like just what his game is. But it is, he's finding ways to be like, all right, I guess I'll just distribute for a little bit because Wisnowskis can't miss and Bernhardt scoring like crazy. And so I don't even have to score all that many goals. So I will kind of give Brendan O'Neill some love as a feeder. I think he's kind of earned that because his shot just isn't going. And for the record, his shot wasn't going to start last year either. And it all kind of worked out as the season went on. He had some abysmal shooting games to start 2025 and was still okay. But I think, you know, I like TJ being in there. Bernhardt for sure. Although if you want to like be weird. Bernhardt, I guess, moved to midfield a little bit for some of the, their game over this past weekend. And I think it will kind of go between the two spots, especially when Kavanaugh's back in the lineup. But those two guys, Malone, Bernhardt, I think McAsee's been really good. I might be sour on the Cannon just because their last offensive game was like just so poor. But that might just be recency bias because he's been really, really good. He's got the pair of twos from that that first game that they played.
Yeah, those step back twos. Defenders going underneath, kind of back to back games were really like really cool part to unlock your game. And should we give takes about that at all, Rosie? Did you have any thoughts on?
Oh, well,
I would actually throw, you know who you can throw in there? Throw in Mikey Bame in there. He had a bye week, so he's not, like, fresh in people's minds.
That
man, those first two games he played, he is playing like a guy who doesn't want to lose a job. You know, that first game when he was Redwood's first three goals of the season were scored or assisted by Mikey Bame. That's another guy who's like, whenever these other guys come back, you ain't letting me go. You got to make it somebody else. So I would put his name in there, too, even though he only played the two games because of the kind of the funky schedule. I think he deserves at least a mention.
You're around the world there too, in the dub.
Yeah.
I think I'll have it more. The Redwoods will have more chances at the team of the month in June when they presumably run the California weekend here.
The question is, will Logan Wisnauskas have more chances to be on the team of the month?
So that's what I wanted to ask you about. So Pat Cavanaugh coming back from the pup list presumably soon. Are you sticking, like, it's pretty clear that Tim Sudan likes Jared Bernhardt down at attack. To have that flexibility to bring him out for a few possessions, like you mentioned, Arashta, out of the box, is a really nice wrinkle that you can throw at opposing defenses for that speed down the alley or downhill so quickly. But, like, you saw it with that, like, Paisano over to O'Neill down to like Bernhardt. That Rosie, you and I were like, did that go off the crossbar? Did he make the save and then Wisnauskas bury the rebound? No, it was just a beautiful feed. He's got all the like playmaking abilities to stay down at attack. And I don't think you necessarily want to bring Pat Cavanaugh out of the box. You saw that went with Boston.
I don't think that's an option. No.
So that then becomes Logan Wisnauskas coming out of the box because he would probably get the short stick anyway if a defense would try to do that. But now you kind of need the long pole on him because he's shooting so damn efficiently.
Yeah, I feel like when Pat Cavanaugh comes back into the lineup, Logan Wisnauskas kind of just gets demoted, essentially, you know? Even if you do kind of move him to a midfield role, I don't think we're going to see him with the same volume or effect that we've seen him thus far this season. And, you know, I think part of that's just kind of the nature of the beast. You know, I mean, there's a lot of guys in a similar situation who lose the job, right? Or who get bumped to protected rosters
or
like that.
Or does Team USA gold medal winning MVP Brennan O'Neill go back to the position where he got that MVP against those short sticks in the World Games? As you bring Brennan O'Neill out of the box.
You know, ordinarily I would say, well, it kind of evolved where they were like, we need to have him on the field at all times. But if I did have to pick a coach who might be inclined to try that, I think Tim Sudan is probably the one who would surprise me the least. He's really not opposed. We see this with Bernhardt all the time, right? I feel like he kind of moves Bernhardt around like a chess piece. You know, he'd say, you know, we had you here and that was working. Let's take you around here and try that, see if this will work because, you know, the defense has adjusted in this sort of way. Whereas a lot of coaches are generally more of the sort of you go play attack, you play this wing, you play that one, right? So I wouldn't be shocked if Sudan does decide to kind of do something like that. But I feel like when I would guess that when Kavanaugh's back, he's just going to be back. And that's going to be, unfortunate for, Wisnauskas for MVP you know, bettors or something like that. But I feel like that's probably the most likely outcome.
The other thing I was thinking about while you were saying all that genius, Rosie, is can I stick Chad Palumbo on my team of the month midfield just because of vibes? Like, best month ever. And as a champion, Princeton, and just straight vibes to throw that BTV on his first touch. Ice in the game with those two goals. Getting Tierney all riled up. Like, that's great stuff. That's great stuff. Let's end the podcast.
I had a better month.
No one has had a better month than Chad Palumbo. You're kind of darn right. Let's end the podcast with a spin forward look towards week 4 at American Legion Memorial Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina, where the group of like 40 plus of these men will take part in Team USA training camp on the road to Japan 2027 and the following days. So that's a fun storyline. See if we get any extra scuffles, maybe positional battles, perhaps. I'll go first for the game I'm looking forward to most. Then I'm going to throw it to Rosie. Rest you. You'll wrap us up. For all the reasons that we've said on this podcast, lineup decisions wise, I think the weekend finale is what I'm most excited for. Boston Cannons versus the Philadelphia Waterdogs. How do they handle the Astronauting situation? Seems like they're sticking with Brian Kelly. How do they incorporate Rick Neri, Logan Ipp at all? And Philadelphia Waterdogs, like we said in the last couple of years, there's only one ball to go around. How can they start to score some more double digits here? Because they've got so much freaking talent. Rosie, which game are you most excited for in Charlotte?
Well, I'll briefly add on, because I was going to say Boston-Philly, because they're always messy. And
yeah, you like the rivalry aspect. So you can agree, but because I know you got different reasons.
Yeah, I'll just say that. I'll just say I do like the beef, and I know Philly needs to start scoring a lot of goals here to get that score differential down. And if they do pull that off against Boston, Boston's not going to like that. So what do we see going forward there? But I will pick another game. Let me go New York versus California, the second game on Friday night. I mean, first of all, the debut of Matt Rambo trotting out in blue against the team that he had all that success against. You know, pretty much a different roster, but it's, you know, same bear. So we'll see what happens there. And plus the Redwoods on coming off of this bye. I want to see what they can bring to the table, and the same sort of roster issues now with who are they going to dress and not. They've got a lot of questions, a lot of guys who are available, you know, saying, hey, I'm ready to play. And they're going to say, well, let's figure out how this goes from here. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that lineup. Looking forward to seeing if the Atlas can kind of right the ship there. And looking to see who all's going to dress on that Redwood squad. Do we get Kavanaugh back? Guernsey? I really don't know yet.
I think for me, I'm also with you. Like, the Boston-Philly game is fascinating. I'm, like, not to be, like, pessimistic or weird, but kind of want to see who loses, you know? Like, somebody's leaving that game 1-3, man. And if it's Philly, they're leaving it 1-3 with a just dumpster fire of a score differential at this point. And, like, that is a things-are-getting-dire situation if you're 1-3 and have a double digit in the negative score differential. So that, I mean, whoever comes out of that game on the wrong end is a fascinating reason to watch it. Again, to pick a different game, the one to start the weekend, Utah and Carolina. I think if you hate goals, that might be the game for you. I don't know how Utah's offense is going to look, especially if Jack Rowlett is healthy and in the lineup. Utah's offense against Blaze Reardon and that crew, if the Carolina defense is all the way healthy and out there, it could be a day where goals are hard to come by, man. Like, Brett Dobson is great. Utah's defense can still, like, battle to keep them with teams, and I think that could be a, like, a bruiser of a rock fight. And if that's the kind of game that you like, that'll be a fun one to watch. I think the crowd will be great. The Carolina fans have been so good to the PLL. And I think that market, that venue, has always been exciting. You know, everybody says wherever they go, like, yeah, we love coming here, blah, blah, blah. About Carolina, they sincerely mean it. Like, that market's been so good. So I think that Carolina at home, that opening night, in a game that could be kind of like physical and you're going to have to earn every blade of grass out there, that can make for a fun game, even if it is low scoring. So I think that one could be a good time.
If we get more than like 10 minutes where both teams can't score, well, let's get like Blaze and Brett Dobson just shooting on each other, like the goalie wars during All-Star weekend. Colin Kurse was just crushing Dobson there, but that'll be a rock fight for sure.
Let me add one thing to what Dan was saying about Boston Philly there. If Philly, not to pile on a little more, if they do lose and drop 1-3, they've also got a week 5 bye, so they're gonna have to sit in that for a long time. Just a little more motivation to you know, turn this thing around ASAP.
Man, like, they went into this season looking like, look at us. We've got all these great offensive players. We've got so much time to figure it out. And if they go 1-3, then they have it figured out in a hurry. So it'll be fun to watch. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure to check back here next week for more Inside Lacrosse podcast. If you like what you heard, share with a friend, leave a review, and we'll catch you here next time.